is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Welcome on in to White Sox Weekly. I am Jeff Meller here with you each and every Saturday, breaking down not just White Sox baseball, but of course, Major League Baseball. We are in the throes of the MLB playoffs, and if you missed last night's ALDS Game 5 in Seattle, you missed an absolute beautiful ball game. Folks were sleepless in Seattle until Adam Amin delivered the call of Jorge Polanco's game-winning hit last night.
3-2. Polanco sends it into right and will send Seattle to the American League Championship Series for the first time in 24 years.
Highlight courtesy of Fox, and it was fantastic baseball. If you're a baseball fan, I don't know how you could not appreciate that game, especially if you're a neutral. We had so much drama throughout that game. It was fantastic. And I promise you, we will have plenty of White Sox talk coming your way. But of course, during the playoffs, we're going to break down what's going on around baseball as well. And the Mariners punched their tickets to the ALCS, as you heard, for the first time in 24 years. Jorge Polanco coming through in the bottom of the 15th. With a walk-off base knock in what was the longest winner-take-all game in Major League Baseball postseason history. That's right, longest winner-take-all game. It was so good. The baseball was absolutely fantastic. Where to begin? Josh Naylor in the bottom of the second off of Tarek Skubal. Really the only way the Mariners could find a way to score off of, I'm going to go ahead and call him the best pitcher in baseball. Paul Skeens certainly can go ahead and argue, but Tarek Skubal is at the very least the co-best pitcher in all of baseball right now, as he's going to win his second straight Cy Young Award this season. Last night, he set a record for most strikeouts in an elimination game by a starter with 13 strikeouts in just six innings of work. He gave up one earned run, and that had to be manufactured by none other than Josh Naylor, who in the bottom of the second stole third base. We've been talking about it all year long. Josh Naylor, he's added that element to his game, the ability to steal bases. Even though he doesn't have a top percentile sprint speed in all of baseball, he's just baseball smart. He knows what to do. He steals third, which enables Mitch Garver to sack fly him home in the bottom of the second. That's the only run that the Tigers were able to scratch across on Skubal, but it was significant because, of course, they would need that to force extra innings in this game. Kerry Carpenter hits a two-run shot. He certainly plagued the White Sox this season, having a monstrous year, including a three-home run game against the White Sox earlier this year. Carpenter, he manufactured the only offense for the Tigers in this game with a two-run homer in the top of the sixth. Once Tarek Skubal finally left the game, he had to. He was doing everything he could, and certainly, though, you know, 99 pitches and with a runner on base, the Tigers chose to go to the bullpen, which did good work, but that enabled Luis Rivas on his birthday to come up with a game-tying single in the bottom of the seventh, and then we forge onward into extra innings when, man, you want to talk about drama. It seemed like quite often you had to ask yourself, wait a minute. I thought when the postseason started, the Manfred man, the ghost runner at second, I thought that wasn't a thing. I thought they did away with that. No. They did. It just seemed like in almost every inning that both the Tigers and Mariners had a runner on second base with nobody out that they couldn't seem to push across. It was absolutely crazy. In the bottom of the second, the bottom of the 10th, the Mariners could not get Victor Robles home from second with nobody out. The Tigers in the top of the 11th failed to score Kerry Carpenter in the very same situation on second with nobody out. In the top of the 12th, Zach McKinstry and Dylan Dingler got on first and second to lead off the inning. However, and then were sacked over to second and third base. And then how about Bizardo in relief for the Mariners? He was a monster, 2 2/3 innings, 4 strikeouts. It was great theater. And it just seemed like at every turn, the Mariners found a way to get out of trouble. Jack Flaherty did as well for the Tigers, but ultimately it was Jorge Polanco coming up in the bottom of the 15th to end, again, what was the longest winner-take-all postseason game in Major League history. Great theater last night. The Mariners will take on the Blue Jays in the ALCS starting tomorrow night right here on ESPN 1000, your home of the Major League Baseball playoffs. And don't forget, we still have one more winner-take-all game coming your way tonight. The Cubs are in Milwaukee to take on the Brewers in Game 5 of the NLDS, a game you can hear right here on ESPN 1000. That'll start right around 7 o'clock. Hey, Sox fans, stay up to date on all things White Sox by following the team's official social media accounts. Don't miss a minute of the action on and off the field. Follow at White Sox on social today. I'm Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, we will get into the White Sox. Vinny Duber of the Chicago Sun-Times joins me next right here on ESPN 1000.
Black and Abdallah, 2 p.m. weekdays, ESPN Chicago.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app as we recap some of the past White Sox season and also discuss the MLB playoffs, which we are in the throes of right now as we speak. And right now, my pleasure to be joined by Vinny Duber, who is covering baseball, of course, the White Sox, but right now he's in the midst of covering the MLB playoffs, primarily the Cubs, for the Chicago Sun-Times. But he knows this White Sox organization very well as he's been covering them for years, and he joins me right now on White Sox Weekly. Vinny, thanks so much for your time this afternoon. Do appreciate it, my man.
You got it, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing well. I hope you're doing well as well. I'm curious. Let's start with the White Sox before we get into the MLB playoffs a little bit here. Just what was your reaction to the 2025 season? I was thinking about it this way, Vinny. So they made a 19-win improvement on their record from 2024, which was an abject disaster. And I just wish they would have won one more game because I would have had a nice round number of saying they won 20 games more than last year, but they're still 20 games shy of a 500 record. Nevertheless, they won 19 games more, and they are 21 games shy of a 500 record. So what was your take on the season that just unfolded, and where do they go from here looking ahead at 2026?
Yeah, you're right. 20 sounds a whole lot better than 19, right? It's like how the advertisers always use $9.99 instead of $10, right? But listen, the season was a good one in a way in certain aspects of Chris Getz's rebuilding project. And I think that's really how you got to look at everything involving this White Sox team right now, is where are they kind of on the road to what they hope is being a contending team at some point in the future. I mean, the emergence of guys like Colson Montgomery and Kyle Teal, I think have to be the biggest screaming headlines in terms of the positive aspects of the White Sox season. I don't think anybody thought, maybe besides Colson, thought Colson was going to come up and do what he did right out of the gate there in his first taste of the major leagues after he kind of struggled to get off the ground in AAA. But it turned out that that didn't matter because he was able to come up and show that power bat as well as play really good defense at shortstop. Teal behind the plate and with the bat looks like something to build around also, and to have that kind of immediate return off of a trade like the Garrett Crochet trade is a little rare, really, right? I mean, because you're trading, if you're the White Sox, you're trading someone who's good in the moment for something that could be good down the road. That was a package of four prospects. And when you hear that, you don't necessarily think immediate impact. I think Kyle Teal provided that and showed that, you know, there's definitely some benefit from making that trade, even as Garrett Crochet goes out and has one of the best seasons of any pitcher in baseball in 2025. So you got those two, as well as Caro and Mydroth and Vargas, kind of making this position player core that I don't know how many people thought was going to emerge in 2025, right? The eyes were kind of on the pitching and the young pitching and what maybe could come with that. Things kind of flipped a little bit, in which you got people excited now about the position players, and the pitching maybe, I don't know if took a step back is the right word, but certainly is looking like it might be a little bit slower road to that at the major league level than it looked like maybe at the beginning of the season. But if you're talking positives, it's those position player guys. If you're talking negatives, well, just look at the record like you were talking about. Another 100-loss season and a last-place finish in the American League. So there's obviously a long way to go, but 19 games is a pretty big improvement. It might be the least exciting to a fan base 19-game improvement that there has been in a long time in baseball, but there it was, and there are positives to point to.
Vinny Duber joining me here on White Sox Weekly. Of course, you can follow him on the socials at Vinny Duber, D-U-B-E-R. You know that, though. Of course, working for the Sun-Times these days. Vinny, I thought that's a great synopsis right there. You hit on a lot of the key points that were good for the White Sox this past year. And, you know, I think maybe for the casual White Sox fan who was disenchanted based on 2024 and maybe was not won over immediately or not all back in to start the season, maybe they did eventually, you know, become a little bit more invested in this team, especially out of the All-Star break when they put together that nice little run. But I think what you hit on there with the return for Garrett Crochet is critical when we analyze this season, because especially, I know the Red Sox got bounced in the playoffs here already, but what Garrett Crochet did in the playoffs, I think for some White Sox fans was, you know, it's that old reminder of like watching an X and being like, we had some good times there. I wish we could go back. But then you look and you turn and you look at what you have going on right now. And it makes sense to me when you look at it that way. Like, yes, Garrett Crochet is one of the best starters in all of baseball. But those four pieces that the White Sox got back already look like it's a good return. So this is the proverbial win-win trade when you break it down. And, of course, Braden Montgomery hasn't even made it up to the majors yet, but he might be, when all is said and done, the best player who came back in that return.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see. Obviously, with these, time will tell. But I do think that the interesting thing is that you've got at least one player, but you could argue certainly two if you include Chase Meidroth in that, making that immediate impact, which is kind of a little bit of a rarity in the, you know, all-star for prospects kind of trade genre, you could say. Listen, I think it's going to be up for debate for a long time whether the White Sox should have traded Garrett Crochet. Mm-hmm. The guy is unbelievable. I mean, he's one of the two or three best pitchers in baseball, you could argue, and he might be setting himself up to be that for a long time. You could very easily suggest that the White Sox maybe should have built around him, but the timing just kind of wasn't there in the eyes of the White Sox front office. And for them to have some success from guys like Teal and Meidroth, and certainly you mentioned Braden Montgomery, who's their top-ranked prospect at the moment, to have that success in the first year after acquiring them, after saying goodbye to Garrett Crochet, that is a win. I don't know if it's going to be the win, so to speak, if we can get into semantics a little bit. But, I mean, I just, every time I see Garrett Crochet's stat line or see highlights of him pitching or watch a game in which he pitches, I say, wow, this guy is something else. And I think White Sox fans feel the same way with the added emotion of, wow, I wish he was still wearing a White Sox uniform, right? So that's going to be a debate for a long time, and I think that's something that fans can find, I don't know if fun is the right word in the moment for White Sox fans, but certainly it's part of the sports fan life. And we'll see where that goes as the White Sox kind of keep building toward a future that includes all the guys that they got in that trade.
Vinny Duber joining me here on White Sox Weekly. All right, so looking at the roster as a whole, you know, what I was encouraged by was that they were able to do this because of the young players that you mentioned. Certainly, at the end of the season for the last couple of weeks, I did feel like there was a bit of a fall off when all of a sudden you took three veteran bats altogether out of the lineup. And, of course, Luis Robert was gone for the last month, but you had Benintendi and Talkman as well, who for the most part weren't around for the last 10 or so days. And so I think it does go to show, though, that the White Sox still have plenty of work to do. You need some consistent veteran. I don't know if it's veteran presence, but you need players to give you quality at bats. That I think it lengthened out the lineup, and that was something that was maybe not always given enough credit when the White Sox were going well during that stretch in the second half of the season where, hey, it certainly helps to have guys out there giving you, you know, an ability to get on base in addition to all the power that, you know, Colson and Kyle Teal were providing. So I'm curious, what is, in Vinny Duber, let's let you play GM here, What's the plan for the White Sox with the outfield next season? How would you approach it with what they have? Obviously, you know, Talkman, somebody who they can obviously bring back if they'd like to. Luis Robert, they have the option on. Chris Getz has, I think, made it about as clear without saying definitively that they're hoping he will be back. Of course, Benintendi's under contract. So how do you think the White Sox outfield looks moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think you just laid it out there, really. I mean, you should, first of all, you should never let me play GM. That's not a good idea.
It's what we do, though, Vinny. That's the best part of the job, is playing GM with, might I say, no repercussions whatsoever. That's the best part.
Exactly. They call it fantasy baseball for a reason, right? Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, I think if we look at what is going to happen, I think you laid it out. I mean, Andrew Benintendi's under contract. You've got Luis Robert Jr., who's got the option that Chris Getz has been, you know, very kind of clear that they're going to pick up, like you said, without saying it definitively. But so there's center field, and Mike Tuchman is a guy who's under club control and a guy who they absolutely loved in the clubhouse. I mean, this is a guy who received rave reviews for everything he was doing off the field, really all year long. And so I think that that kind of makes sense. Now, if you'll remember back to last offseason, Tuchman was kind of brought in to be part of a platoon. So maybe there's something else to add there in right field. They signed him. They had signed Austin Slater. Maybe there's an Austin Slater type that comes in this offseason to kind of go with Tuchman in right field. But while the outfield might seem a bit of a mystery because it's so veteran heavy, right, because there's not those core guys there like you see on the infield and behind home plate, it kind of looks set, at least for opening day, to me. Now, remember, this is a team, like you said, that is kind of not all the way there yet, right? And so I think next year is going to count as another, you know, step in this rebuilding process that is going on. They might be looking to move some of those guys at the trade deadline if the opportunity arises, those veteran guys who have been around, if the production is there, if the health is there with all three of those guys, right? So I don't know that there's a ton of room to go or a ton of maybe even desire to go kind of rework that whole thing this offseason, because I think you've got those three veteran guys who are all under club control who can all come back. I mean, listen, Talkman was probably one of the more productive players on the team this season, even though he I don't think he even played 100 games with some of the injuries that he dealt with. But while that unit was banged up and certainly at the end of the year, like you mentioned, kind of fell out of the lineup all at the same time, I see all three of those guys as being pretty good chances that they're going to be in the outfield on opening day.
What did you make of Lenin Sosa's year this season? He led the team in home runs and RBIs. The on-base percentage was still a little lacking. He ended up at .293, but I mentioned 22 home runs, 75 RBIs, and I don't know if I'll call it versatility because it was good versatility. It was almost a versatility by necessity because I think the White Sox were trying to figure out where he would hurt them least defensively, whether it was second base or first base. But what did you make of Lenin Sosa's season at in his age 25 year?
Yeah, well, I think the thing that I take away from it is I don't think he did anything this year to warrant being kind of cut loose, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that he was maybe – now, granted, he had the whole season to do it. I think he led the team in games played, but, he had the whole season to do it, but it kind of was playing for a job of the future, right? Or at least the near future. I don't know if he's really done enough to make himself part of that long-term core, but as they move forward, there's really no reason to get rid of him with the roster that they have. He did some really nice things at the plate, not exclusively. He had plenty of poor moments as well. And you mentioned an on-base percentage that's under 300. But yeah, in the field, obviously he's still lacking, but they can stick him there. And while they're waiting for some of these other guys to come up or waiting for other guys to come off the IL in certain situations moving forward, I don't think he's done anything to necessarily let the front office say, all right, that's enough of this experiment, because they are in rebuilding mode, right? They do have the time to give to a player like that to see what he can become.
Shane Smith was a revelation, and if Colson Montgomery wasn't the story of the year for the White Sox, Shane Smith probably was. What did you make of him and just your conversations inside the clubhouse with him? What were your takeaways on the season he had being named the White Sox All-Star rep? And, of course, I think showing everybody at the end of the year, the final game of the season, what potentially he is capable of.
Yeah, in a year, like I mentioned earlier, in a year where the pitching kind of lost some of the excitement that it maybe went into the year with, he's a guy that stood out as, okay, they've found something here. Now, who knows how long that hangs on for. We saw kind of a really tale of two halves for the most part with him, and his, you know, first chunk of the season was just fantastic, and then he had that stretch in the middle where he really, really struggled. But again, this was his first taste of the major leagues. This is a guy who, you know, was a Rule 5 pick who had never played in the big leagues before, and he just comes out of the gate and had such success. He did show toward the end of the season a way to get kind of back to some of the success he was having earlier in the year. I think he even talked about the middle of the season, and some of the coaching staff talked about, you know, something goes bad right at the beginning there in the middle, and it was haunting him, not just in that start, but for starts to come. It looked like he really kind of solved that problem toward the end of the season and wasn't really dragging some past mistakes into his next outing. And I think that's a sign of growth, right? You want to see those really concrete signs of development as a team moves through a rebuilding process like this, has young guys playing at the major league level like the White Sox do. Shane Smith is absolutely, you know, a part of this rotation now and into the future. I think that they can pencil him in as somebody who they want to hopefully build a rotation around. Will he be the ace of the rotation of the future? Who knows? They've got some really, you know, highly regarded pitching prospects down in the minor leagues right now. It's going to take a little while for those guys to make it to the major leagues. But Shane Smith is definitely part of that equation moving forward. What a success for the White Sox to be able to find that type of pitcher, that type of you know, player for the future in the Rule 5 draft.
Vinny Duber joining me here on White Sox Weekly. Something you mentioned there that triggered a question for me. You mentioned the coaching staff, right? And obviously there were some changes, or there will be some changes, as the White Sox announced at the end of the season that they did not renew the contracts of Ethan Katz, Marcus Thames, Jason Bourgeois, and Drew Butera. And we also know subsequently that Sergio Santos has left the organization, who was the AAA manager for the Charlotte Knights. I mean, it wasn't a huge surprise to me when you consider that Will Venable really didn't have an opportunity to assemble his staff. What are your thoughts? I think the headliner, of course, being the fact that Ethan Katz is no longer going to be the pitching coach for the White Sox moving forward.
Yeah, I was actually kind of surprised by that one. But again, you bring it up, and I think that it's true. Listen, this is Will Venable's staff. This is he plays a huge role in this organization. They've pegged him as a guy that they want to take this team from rebuilding to contending. Why wouldn't you let him surround himself with the people that he picks, right? And certainly he took the year to learn about these guys, but he deserves that opportunity to hire his own staff as the manager and a guy who's going to be playing a significant role in this thing moving forward. I do think it was a little odd, just because Chris Getz did hire all of these guys just you know, not too long prior, you know, all those assistant coaches, Chris Getz in tandem with the then manager Pedro Grifol. Obviously the managerial change makes a big difference, so, you know, to have these guys go from one manager to the next, but the general manager stays the same, maybe you thought there'd be a little bit more continuity moving forward. But again, Will Venable's the manager. Of course, you would give him the opportunity to have the most say on who's going to be a part of his staff. But Ethan Katz had some great success stories over the years that he was here with the White Sox. I mean, Giolito, obviously the guy he knew from high school days. And then, you know, what he did with Rodon and Dylan Cease and Garrett Crochet. You know, if you put that together as a rotation in Major League Baseball right now, you got to have one of the better rotations in the game, I would imagine. So great work by Katz with those individual pitchers over the years. But as the White Sox look to kind of change everything, I mean, you look at behind the scenes, all the changes they've made to this organization, this is another aspect in which they're kind of just moving forward in complete overhaul mode.
Vinny Duber covering baseball for the Chicago Sun-Times, and you mentioned you are covering the MLB playoffs. You're helping pick up some of the coverage regarding the Cubs. They have an elimination game tonight, Game 5, which you can hear right here on your home of the Major League Baseball playoffs, ESPN 1000, and it will be the Cubs in Milwaukee in an elimination game. Any takeaways from this series, and who do you think comes away and gets the Dodgers in the NLCS?
I mean, the Cubs have the momentum right now. That's obviously the case. I mean, Wrigley Field was just rocking for game four. I mean, literally the press box was moving on us. I was getting a little nervous. But, you know, the momentum is firmly in the hands of the Northsiders right now. That being said, you change the scene, you change that crowd, and it could go right back to what it was in games one and two, which was momentum squarely with the Milwaukee Brewers, right? So it's going to come down to, can the Cubs keep pitching the way that they did in games three and four? But obviously the bats need to show up too. These are two really good teams. And I think White Sox fans can look at not just these two teams, but the teams in the playoffs and say, okay, that's what's needed to compete at this level. Can our team put that together one day? I think it's going to be the Cubs in the end. Of course, now that'll, you know, my prediction track record, that'll be proven completely wrong in a few hours. But the Cubs have the momentum right now. It looks like they figured out some of the offensive stuff with the bats being a little quiet earlier in the playoffs for them. So I'll say they eke it out. The bullpen has just been so good on the north side. So that's what I'm going to go with for game five.
No worries about that, man. It'll be fun to watch and see what happens tonight. And, of course, we will be reading you for the Sun-Times. Vinny, appreciate your time this afternoon. Thanks so much, man.
Thank you. Always a pleasure. Thanks, Jeff.
My pleasure, Vinny. Vinny Duber of the Chicago Sun-Times. White Sox fans, get access to the best seats at the best value and lock in a 2026 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups, exciting new promotions, and opening day on Thursday, April 2nd. Plus, enjoy flexible payment plans, savings on single games, and more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2026. I'm Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, guess what? We're coming up on the 20-year anniversary of the White Sox and Angels in the ALCS. We'll talk a little bit about that coming up next right here on ESPN 1000.
White Sox Weekly Saturdays on ESPN Chicago.
Escobar, another strikeout. Kierzynski is going down to first. The home plate umpire has now made a call and safe, and the Angels are already off the field. The home plate umpire said that ball hit into the ground and that the tag needed to be made or a throw down to first, or now is he going to bring Kierzynski back to the plate? He's not. Kierzynski is going to go down to first, and Mike Socha wants to know what the heck just happened.
Ah, yes. Game 2, October 12th, 2005, which means tomorrow will be the 20th anniversary of A.J. Pierzynski reaching on a drop third strike at Wright Field in what would be what just that moment really did turn the tide of the ALCS, because I'm sure plenty of White Sox fans out there listening. I'm Jeff Meller, by the way, here on White Sox Weekly. But I'm sure plenty of folks out there who are listening who are Sox fans remember that the White Sox went down one game to none after the first game, which took place on October 11th, 2005, which is actually today, the 20th anniversary of the start of the 2005 ALCS for the White Sox and Angels. And a couple of through lines here, because so we're on the 20th anniversary of that series beginning today. And, of course, I'm looking ahead a little bit tomorrow night. The Blue Jays and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. will open the ALCS in 2025. And I find it interesting because, of course, Vladimir Guerrero Sr. was the scariest bat in the Angels lineup in 2005. Their cleanup hitter. He had faded ever so slightly, but he wasn't the guy that he was in Montreal, where he was the, you know, prolific power speed combo with that huge hose in right field. But he was still one of the most dangerous hitters in all of baseball. In fact, he, in that season, ended up finishing third in the AL MVP voting behind Alex Rodriguez and David Ortiz. But that year, Vladdy Guerrero hitting cleanup for the Angels for the majority of that season, he hit .317 with a .394 on base, 32 homers and 108 RBIs, 13 stolen bases. He certainly, like I said, didn't move the way he did during his prime, but at the same time, that addition in the Angels lineup certainly made them a it kind of completed the entirety of that lineup. And it's funny because I'm looking back at how different times were back in that day. The Angels, a quick refresher in case you had forgotten, the primary players for the Angels team that year, you had Benji Molina behind the plate. He hit 15 home runs. You had Darren Erstad at first base, the proverbial contact hitter, leading things off for the most part generally for them. Adam Kennedy was the second baseman. Orlando Cabrera, we're certainly familiar with his game on the south side. At shortstop, it was Dallas McPherson, their primary third baseman, although they had a rotating group of third basemen, including Sean Figgins, who played a lot there during that time. He actually had 62 steals that year. Back when 62 steals, I mean, it's still kind of an eye-popping number, but this is back when 62 steals really meant something because you didn't have the new rules, which have changed the running game so dramatically the way it has over the past couple of years. But anyway, I digress. Garrett Anderson, of course, in left field. Steve Finley, the center fielder, Vladdy in right slash DH for the most part for the Angels. And they were led by Bartolo Colon, John Lackey. Paul Byrd was the game one starter for the Angels, who actually got the win in game one at Wright Field. So we heard the highlights of A.J. Pierzynski reaching base on the drop third strike. And I'm, you know, it's crazy because in some ways it feels like yesterday. And of course, in many other ways, it feels like 20 years ago. And what's crazy when I look back through some of the box scores from that series, the White Sox would go on to win the next four games after losing that game one. They would win the next four games, and significantly, and probably something that will never be done again, is the fact that the White Sox had four straight complete game wins by their starting pitchers. And that's right, four straight games where they had complete games, starting with Mark Burley in game two, where Mark Burley, he only allowed one earned run, and he did that on 99 pitches. So basically, a typical Mark Burley start. But he would end up winning that game 2-1. Of course, A.J. Pierzynski's drop third strike really creating the rally and helping undo Kelvin Escobar for the Angels, who was working for them in that game. Now, game three, John Garland would go to the mound. The White Sox would win that game 5-2. Garland on 118 pitches. That's right, 118. John Garland went nine innings, two earned runs. He struck out seven, and he only walked one. And again, 118 pitches, something that you just don't see in this day and age. I'll go through them, and then I'll kind of give you a synopsis in the difference between 2005 and 2025, what we're seeing now. In game four, the White Sox beat the Angels 8-2. And in that game, Freddie Garcia, Sweaty Freddie, complete game, two earned runs, one walk. He struck out five, 116 pitches for Freddie Garcia in that game that took place on October 15th in 2005. And then the White Sox closed out the series in Anaheim. Remember, they had the old 2-3-2 formats for the ALCS. And the White Sox closed it out with a 6-3 win over the Angels, in which game one starter Jose Contreras, completed the four straight complete games. Contreras threw 114 pitches. He gave up three earned runs, but again, the White Sox won handily. They won that game 6-3 to close out the series, the ALCS, against the Angels, and move on to the World Series to take on the Astros, which obviously is something that we're going to cover a little bit more next week, when it'll be the 20th anniversary of the White Sox in the World Series. That's next week. Next week's White Sox Weekly. But I digress. It's amazing to look at the White Sox pitching staff going on that run. And again, it's something that I don't think we'll ever see again, four straight complete games in the LCS, or honestly, any series for that matter. You can go ahead and throw in the World Series. Baseball is so different nowadays, and it's not just the idea that pitchers, you know, rarely will you see a pitcher allowed to go 118 pitches. We knew about the third time through the order penalty back in 2005, but it wasn't so well known across baseball where it was adopted that obviously you're not going to let your pitcher try and go through the order a third time in a close game. Let me say that, in a close game. In playoff games nowadays, what we see in 2025, and this has been kind of the, I'd say it almost for the, maybe a little less than a decade, but almost for a decade now, what we've seen is managers on every playoff team have adopted the strategy, listen, it's get 27 outs. Figure out a way to get your 27 outs that day, and guess what? Tomorrow's starting pitcher, you'll figure that out tomorrow. It's fascinating to see how far the game has come in 20 years, looking back on it now. And it's just, now, we can argue about whether or not it's good for the game to have pitchers who you don't want to allow to go deeper into the game, because strategically, you look down at your bullpen and you've got three or four flame-throwing dragons who can, you know, hit triple digits. So it's understandable why we've gotten to this place. But I do think, you know, looking back now in the 125th season in the White Sox history and the 20th anniversary of that team all season long, we talked a lot about the White Sox 2005 team and what they were able to do, mostly, or, you know, with a large deal of credit going to the strength of what that pitching staff, that rotation, was able to give the White Sox. And it's just, it's such a different game. And I just like to emphasize that now, because I think sometimes if you're growing up and, or you've grown up and you're now, you know, maybe you're in your late 20s, maybe you're in your 30s, maybe you're in your 40s or 50s, and you're looking at baseball today and longing for the old days, I'm with you. I get it. But I also, you have to understand it, everybody across baseball now wants to go to their relievers to get three outs and then turn to the next stud reliever. And it's just changed baseball dramatically. And it's fascinating to watch. And again, the through line for me was watching Vladimir Guerrero Jr. for the Blue Jays and then remembering, oh yeah, Vladimir Guerrero Sr. was on the Angels hitting cleanup for them. And just remembering how dominant the White Sox pitching staff was. It was a fun series to think about and obviously watch and see. And of course, it ended up in a White Sox World Series championship ultimately, which is why we can look back at it so fondly now. I'm Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. Hey, Sox fans, sign up to become a White Sox insider and get special offers, single game tickets, pre-sales, and other exciting Sox content delivered free to your inbox. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. Jeff Meller here on White Sox Weekly. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show with a farm report right here on ESPN 1000.
Scanning the globe. Charlotte, Birmingham, Kannapolis, Winston-Salem, Glendale. Let's take a look at the White Sox stars of tomorrow. It's time to check in down on the farm. It's the White Sox Farm Report on the White Sox Audio Network.
Wrapping up White Sox Weekly with a farm report. And, of course, today our focus will be on the Glendale Desert Dogs as the Arizona Fall League has begun. Before I let you hear from White Sox director Paul Janish, let's let you know that if you want to celebrate your special occasion in 2026 with a White Sox party area, reserve your group outing today to get access to the best spaces and top matchups like opening day on April 2nd. Plus, big matchups against the Cubs, Dodgers, and Yankees. For more information, visit whitesox.com/groups or call 312-674-1000. The Desert Dogs did pick up their first victory in the Arizona Fall League on Thursday. Hagen Smith, nice outing for him. He went three shutout innings, gave up three hits, two walks. He did strike out four in his very solid outing for the White Sox, second best pitching prospect in the organization behind Noah Schultz. Of course, Schultz was scheduled to originally be in the Arizona Fall League, but of course he was dealing with some knee issue to close out the season. So, of course, he is getting that cleaned up and should be back and ready to go for the start of spring training, of course. But Hagan Smith, good to see him have a good first outing at the Arizona Fall League. We're still waiting on Braden Montgomery to make his first appearance in the Arizona Fall League. He is slated to play, but of course he's been recovering from that broken bone in his right foot. So hopefully he'll be able to make a debut soon for the Desert Dogs. Paul Janish joined Connor McKnight on his podcast, Road to the Rate, Connor's podcast. And Connor told us, he gave us a teaser last week when he joined us and talked about Paul Janish joining him. I wanted to bring you a soundbite from Paul Janish about Caleb Bonnemer and just exactly what makes him such an exciting prospect inside the White Sox organization.
Again, you go to the makeup. He's not a super vocal guy. He is amongst teammates, but you know, he's not gonna come up and talk to you unless you talk to him in a lot of cases, which is okay, because what he does do every day is show up. And again, you talk about a kid that really loves to work. And I don't care if you're talking about the squat rack or if you're talking about the batting cage, like, that kid works. Physically, he's obviously a little farther down the road than most 19-year-olds. But, you know, the way I describe him is that he doesn't flinch, man. It's, you know, you watch the kid play the game, he doesn't flinch. So it's one of those guys that he really, really enjoys the competitive nature of the game. And again, that's context for success down the road. In terms of position, yeah, I just think it benefits him to continue to play short. Yes, he will do that. He's going to continue to play third. Yeah, I just think the versatility for him is going to be valuable. I think we all feel very good about what he's done offensively up to this point and his projection offensively. So, like, I think it's our job to make him as ready as he can be to do, you know, as many things as he can defensively, so that when the opportunity presents itself, hopefully down the road at the major league level, that he's capable of doing multiple things.
Again, that was White Sox farm director Paul Janish talking about Caleb Bonnemer, who had an extraordinary year for the White Sox, or for Winston-Salem, Kannapolis. He, across two different levels, Bonnemer ended up hitting .281 with a .401 on base. He had 12 homers, 64 RBIs, and 29 steals, along with 77 runs scored in just 107 games. So a very successful year for Caleb Bonnemer, who actually was named, in addition to the Carolina League MVP, he was also named Baseball America's Minor League Player of the Year for the White Sox. So Caleb Bonnemer, of course, the future is bright for him. So it was good to hear Paul Janish on Road to the Rate, which Connor McKnight hosts. Podcasts available for you there wherever you listen to your podcasts, and check it out. Long conversation with Paul Janish, good stuff, along with Connor McKnight there. So take a listen. I thought that was worth bringing to you. As Connor mentioned, he was having him on last week with us, so thought I'd give you a little taste. And for Sox fans out there, if you want more on the White Sox minor league system, go check out Connor's podcast. Always a great listen. That is going to do it for us here on White Sox Weekly this week. I want to say thank you so much to the executive producer of White Sox Baseball, Brendan Riley, for producing today. Thank you to my man, Vinny Duber, for hopping on and talking a White Sox recap and, of course, previewing the Major League Baseball playoffs elimination game, which can be heard right here on your home of the MLB playoffs, ESPN 1000. Again, Cubs and Brewers coming up later on tonight, right around 7 o'clock. But coming up next, Northwestern football, Wildcats, and the Penn State Nittany Lions. That's right here on ESPN 1000.